campaign?
It's very simple. If you go to www.turnitrightsideup.org, they can get more information and join the campaign.
All right, then, turnitrightsideup.org. We've been speaking with Jeremy Greer of CFED. Thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you, Janine. It was great to talk to you.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, all community radio, all the time. Tonight's program of Bread and Roses is brought to you by KBOO members and a grant from Portland 5, presenting singer-songwriter Emil Mathluthi on Monday, May 15th at Newmark Theater. Emil is known for her protest songs, which became anthems for the Tunisian Revolution. Tickets for this all-ages event with Emil and opening vocalist Brianna Marela are available at portland5.com.
Hey, Jenna here from the show Pacific Underground, the radio show that explores the Asian and Pacific Islander experience in America. We're looking for producers and writers to join our team. So we're inviting those who identify as Asian or Pacific Islander to attend a Pacific Underground information meeting on Wednesday, April 26th at 7 p.m. at KBOO Radio, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue at Burnside. More information can be found at www.pacificunderground.org or on our Facebook at PAC Underground.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Sexual Assault Resource Center's 40th Anniversary Fundraiser on Thursday, April 27th at 5 p.m. at Echo Trust in Portland. The Sexual Assault Resource Center was founded in 1977 to promote social justice by eliminating sexual violence in our community through education, support, and advocacy. Their fundraiser features Moody Little Sister and DJ Mr. Moo Moo and more. Again, that's the Sexual Assault Resource Center's 40th Anniversary Fundraiser on Thursday, April 27th at 5 p.m. at Echo Trust, 721 Northwest 9th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Marching at the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of grain, are touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Hey, welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm your host, Pamela Santos, and I'm also here with another co-host, Pucci De Jesus.
Hi.
And we have a great show tonight. We're going to introduce our guests in a little bit, but this is our full-length version of a segment that we like to call Doing Things. And we usually have this little other in parentheses, anybody but men. So basically women, gender nonconforming folks, just doing projects big and small. Bread and Roses is a feminist news and public affairs show on the KBOO airwaves since 1978. We are still the longest running feminist radio broadcast program in the country. And we're a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces, working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this, and we have fun. We want our bread and roses too, get it? So our engineer is Adam. Like I said, we have some great guests for you. But mostly what I'd like to do is just prepare everybody. Get ready to ask your questions, because the very special guest that we have in studio is someone who runs a music and advice show on X-Ray. Hi, Emily.
Hi there.
So we're going to just, as I get prepared to tell you a little bit more about Emily Prado, get your questions ready. You can call in at 503-231-8187. And so that number again is 503-231-8187, and you're going to talk to our great engineer Adam and let us know what questions you want us to answer. So you can ask us for advice, you can ask us for pretty much tips on getting through the rest of this spring or the rest of this year or millennia if we have one. All of these things. You can ask us and we'll see if we can answer it or bluff our way through it. And in between these calls and questions, because we have a bunch that we've gotten from emails, our Facebook page, and our other ways that we get to talk to our listeners, we are going to have some already pre-recorded segments. We're going to have some music from Anna Vo, who is from And Out Recordings, and we also, so that's going to play throughout, and we're also going to have a very short reading, an excerpt from writer Rios de la Luz for later on too, as well as soon as we go to our first break, we're going to have Feminist Headlines, or Singular Headline, by co-producer Cheryl Green. And so all of that is coming up in this next hour, up to 7 o'clock. So stay tuned, get your questions ready. Again, that number is 503-231-8187. And now, while I can pretty much get to, see, the thing is, I have bios on Emily, but I kind of like just finding ways that I can pretty much let people know kind of like where you come into contact in Portland is kind of the nicer thing about all of this. So Emily is not only a radio host, she's also a writer. Did I get your pronouns? I totally forgot to ask about that. Thanks.
Yeah, she, her.
Okay, so she, her. I go by she, her. Poochie?
She, her.
Okay. And it, that and makes you think that I'm not from New York. It's so terrible. I'm going to redo that one. With Emily, they have been writing for a couple of different publications. Portland Mercury is the most regular one that you write for, right? The column is called?
The column is called From Slacktivism to Activism, and it's a weekly roundup of activist-oriented events, as well as a spotlight on different nonprofit organizations each week that folks can volunteer regularly with.
And I know that I've seen your writing also in Bitch Magazine, Bitch Media.
Yeah, yeah. I got my start writing with Bitch Media about 4 years ago. And since then, I have contributed to Feministing, Miss Magazine, Travel Portland. Just this last week, I had my first byline in Portland Monthly Magazine. Yeah, and gonna start writing for Street Roots as well, so got my hands in a lot of honey jars. is that the phrase?
I never know the phrase. I think it's a pot.
Honey pot. Yeah, I'm really bad at those things, but I am a writer. I promise.
What?
No, they're like American colloquialisms.
Yeah.
That as an immigrant Filipina, that I don't, you know, really always go by with.
Yeah, I never follow either. With a, you know, I mean, I speak Spanish, so I know a bunch of Spanish stuff, but
yeah, as the daughter of immigrants as well, I don't know many of them, but I try to learn, or I try to fudge my way through them, and maybe it's just like an Emilyism when I mess them up, which is all the time, so I'm okay with that too.
I like that. One that I don't know why it's stuck in my family. I know it too much. It's Steal Your Thunder.
Oh yeah, someone tries to steal your thunder.
Yeah, like that was a very early one that like is just, oh, okay, this, like you don't know any of the other ones, but you know this one.
One that I just learned, which I really love, is a one-trick pony. As if like you're talking about, you know, me, for example, having one funny joke. That's me being a one-trick pony. I don't know. I love it. I think it's hilarious.
And the nice thing that I like about all of your writing is having it in all these different media publications. Do you feel like you get boxed in what you get to write about? Or because they're all so different, you get to write, you know, all these different interests that you might have?
Yeah, I feel like because I'm a freelance writer, I'm not working with one publication exclusively. I do have the flexibility of going to different publications if I want to say something. So if I want to be particularly edgy, I might, you know, opt to pitch it to Bitch as opposed to something that's a little more commercial that I'm writing for. And I think it really depends on what publication, but I don't typically feel like I'm boxed in. I think I've been really lucky that all the editors I've worked with for the most part are very open to exactly what I'm saying and don't try to change my words too much. So,
But they change headlines, don't they?
They change headlines, but I'm also terrible at headlines. sometimes they don't, but I've had a couple issues, like because most editors are white, often there can be edits made that they don't realize can be like a erasure of identity or can change the context of what I'm saying a lot. So I've had, for example, one time I wrote about women who had been sterilized and they were Latina women, mm-hmm. and the editor had changed it to say Chicana women, and I was like, this is different, you need to change this. And whenever editors do that and publish things without speaking to you, that can also be a big issue, because unless you catch it right away, something is being presented as your words, because that's the way editing works. It's, you know, it doesn't say they edited this word out, you know?
Yeah. And especially when it comes to speaking up for yourself, it's almost like, wait, I have a question for you, Emily. If you are a freelance writer, what is the best way to talk to your editors about when they've changed something that really... it is coming from a white editor not having the context?
For the most part, I feel very comfortable with letting them know, especially, again, because it's coming back to this is being published under my name specifically. Yes, it's the publication, but if something is being changed to change the context of what my words are, then I'm comfortable speaking up with that. There are occasional things that I just let go. I don't argue about if, for example, it's already been published and it isn't sort of the thing where it's only online and you can edit it right away. There have been a couple of times where I just, you know, ignore it, and it's just one of those microaggressions that I have to encounter.
And there, it doesn't seem like there is one way for all these different white editors in mainstream or, you know, supposedly mainstream media publications to sort of get better educated, or just have just, this is the one thing you need to read, please. One, like this.
Yeah, so is that you're asking if there's
One? Like, I wish there was a way that they could all kind of get this one memo around.
I think the main memo is that there needs to be more diversity with editors and in managerial staff in, you know, magazine publications or any sort of publication, because not only is that important to make sure that you are creating content that is relevant, but you're getting different perspectives and you aren't doing this thing where you're just kind of shutting off. I mean, from a business perspective, if you don't have editors of color, you're not being very smart in the audience or reach that you could potentially have. Like that piece this week that The Stranger ran with Rachel Dolezal, that was specifically someone who was a Black writer, a Black academic, who she followed up on Twitter and said that the piece was only possible because she had a Black editor, because both of them were able to come together mm-hmm. and see the importance of the perspectives and pitch it from a different angle.
It's like you accidentally tapped into my brain and we got this mind link, because so that person is Ijeoma Olowu, who is also, I'm not sure if co-founder or founder of The Establishment, mm-hmm. so another media publication. and has been on our show before on Bread and Roses, awesome. One of the Unchased, because she is an Unchased reader as well, all the way from Seattle. We had her call in, I want to say almost right after the election, and she got to talk about the piece that she had about, you know, now this being Trump's America. So it was great to already keep seeing really good work and everything about that. Poochie?
Yeah, she's an excellent writer. No, I wanted to ask you about, have you thought about like branching out into like Latinx media and magazines?
Yeah, definitely. My like main goal right now, I mean, it's been an ongoing goal, but it would be to write for Remezcla. I love,
yes,
Remezcla.
They're so good.
They've ignored my pitches before, but that's okay. I'm gonna keep trying. Just, you know, I figure it'll happen when it needs to happen. And I think that luckily, because I have been still creating work and writing a lot of the stories that I want to write, here in Portland, I get to write stories that maybe have already been written or covered from Remezcla that hasn't here, and mm-hmm. I still get to add those to my clips. That's what they're called. So that's like the types of publications that you've written. And so I wrote about Alice Bag, who Remezcla had already covered, but she's a Chicana punk. And I've done several different things where, like, I interviewed Helado Negro, and yes, that was something I was able to do with Portland Mercury, and that was new here, but wouldn't have necessarily got picked up by Remezcla anyways.
Yeah, well, yeah, because Helado Negro comes here often, I've noticed.
Yeah, but it was really cool to get the chance to interview him, and so I do definitely want to work with specifically like Latinx, you know, national media outlets, but with freelance writing, it's like you got to build up your cred before you can really take it national, but yeah. I'm on my way.
Yeah.
And before we get right into the questions and talking about your show that you co-host is Butter a Carb.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent name.
Megan Hattie, my co-host, came up with that name. We were trying to think of something that was memorable and relevant to us. And on that show, actually, I go by DJ Mommy Miami. So if anyone listens to X-Ray and is hearing me now, you might know me better as DJ Mommy Miami.
I figured that was you. I knew what was happening. But before we get into the questions and all of that, I just wanted to be able to... now we can't segue. Well, we can segue. Talking about more headlines. And just in terms of how we talk about representation. So we have a clip produced by our esteemed, wonderful co-producer Cheryl Green for Bread and Roses, and this coming up is Feminist Headline Singular coming up.
Hey, this is Cheryl with a feminist headline for you. Loretta Ross's work is not new, but I recently came across a wonderful recording of one of her lectures on the radio show called Making Contact. The episode also has a segment with Tina Reynolds, who's the co-founder and chair of Women on the Rise Telling Her Story, Worth. Unfortunately, that episode's not transcribed, but you can find it at radioproject.org from April 12th. I wanted to tell you about Loretta Ross and the organization she co-founded called Sister Song. I'm especially moved by their work on its own and how Loretta talks about ways that society disenables people based on race, ethnicity, gender identity, citizenship, disability, and more. But I also just came across a video clip of alt-writer Ben Shapiro at a college campus laughing about rape, abortion, cancer, and disability. It makes me really want even more to amplify Sister Song's work. Shapiro finds anyone in any type of crisis to be a victim simply by being in that crisis. He was asked a question about a hypothetical situation around abortion access for a hypothetical person who was raped. He then tried to doubly victimize the hypothetical raped woman by asking if she had a disability too. So she was the lowest of the low. Yes, his audience laughed. A lot. But we're not victims. Even if we are victimized by the system, by our communities, by our families, and by white cis men like Shapiro, who take pleasure in laughing at so many of us. Enough with Ben. Here's Sister Song's mission. I'm going to read to you a little bit about Sister Song from their website. To strengthen and amplify the collective voices of Indigenous women and women of color to achieve reproductive justice by eradicating reproductive oppression and securing human rights. The collective was formed in 1997 by 16 organizations of women of color from four mini-communities. Those communities are Native American, African American, Latina, and Asian American. And these organizations recognize that we have the right and responsibility to represent ourselves and our communities, and the equally compelling need to advance the perspectives and needs of women of color. Sister Song is hosting their third national conference called Let's Talk About Sex! And that conference is October 5th through 8th, 2017 at the Hyatt Regency in New Orleans, Louisiana. This year, the theme is Resist, Reclaim, Redefine. If you want to submit a proposal to present a workshop at Let's Talk About Sex, you can download the conference proposal application at sistersong.net/events/. Send in your proposals to this email address, ltas@sistersong.net. Any white people listening to this, please recognize the need for this conference to center and amplify the work of Indigenous women and women of color. Please check out the lecture that Loretta Ross did. Again, you can find it on the Making Contact radio show at radioproject.org. And you can learn so much about the fine work of Sister Song at sistersong.net.
And so that was a little bit of our just for this particular show. We only got 3 minutes and change with co-producer Cheryl Green. If you're listening in right now, it is Bread and Roses every Friday, 6 to 7 p.m. I'm your host, Pamela Santos. In the room, we're definitely giving a lot of love to Cheryl, Pucci, and I, because we love the work that Cheryl does when it comes to acknowledging her privilege as a cis white straight woman in the collective and in the ways that she talks to other guests when she interviews, and getting them to identify the kind of ways in which their identity is related to what they're talking about. So lots of love, right, Pucci?
Yeah, we love you, Cheryl.
As usual, we are, it's not usual, it's usual. I mean, the love, we're like, oh, we love this. That's usual. But what's not usual is doing this call-in show. We've done call-in shows before. You can call 503-231-8187. But in the past, a lot of the times it's sort of with a particular topic. How are you engaging with this news story? How are you engaging with the last one that I did was the Roseburg shooting. And that was really hard, and it was a lot to process that day too. So we also, sometimes it's easier to get questions kind of written out and sent anonymously. So we have got that prepared, don't you worry. And one of the questions that was sent over to us was a question that we really actually intentionally, as I talked with our guest, Emily Prado here, we intentionally wanted to start off with something. I wouldn't say that we have to talk about something positive, but it's sort of just like, here, we're setting the tone for the rest of the questions in the show. So we're going to start off with that question. But before that, can you tell us a little bit more about the kinds of questions that you go over on your own show? Is Butter a Carb?
Yeah. So when our show first started, it's Thursday nights on X-Ray from 9 to 10 p.m., but we originally just kept it really open. It turns out folks have a hard time zoning in on questions that they want to ask if it's open. So what we ended up doing is picking monthly themes. And so the first theme that we had was about love. And the second theme we had was about bodies. And this month we're talking about aging. And so as time goes on, we'll have different themes. We're going to be talking about death. I think next month might be the month we do that. And questions range from everything. For our bodies, we've had someone asking, like, what's your favorite body part on yourself? And other people being like, what is the appropriate way to trim body hair when you live with roommates? And, you know, it's really open-ended, which is what we love. We had a teenage boy text us several times, and It's been nice because he checks back in, but he had a crush on somebody and was like, I think they're perfect and I'm in high school and what do I do? Yeah, exactly. And we're like, you ask them out, just go for it. As far as regrets in life, if I had any, it would be to not make out with the people I wanted to make out with. So
the only I wanted to make out with.
Yeah. So that's the only regret I think I'd have if, you know, a bomb dropped today on us. But I told, mm-hmm. you know, we told him to go for it. And then he texted us back in this past week, I guess yesterday. And he asked them out and they said yes.
Oh my gosh.
So.
And they're in high school?
Yeah. In addition to an advice giver, I'm also a matchmaker, apparently.
Oh, did you really, like, did he really say perfect?
Like I'm quoting him. He said she's the perfect girl for me, and it was cool because actually he first texted in and I just like did a sexist thing where I assumed it was a girl asking about a boy, and someone even texted in listening was like, is it a boy he's asking us or a girl? And I was like, oh, and I asked and it was a boy, and that was really cool to check myself on the own ways that I like perpetuate sexism sometimes too. But he was a boy and he asked this perfect girl out and she said yes.
Oh my god, young love.
Yeah,
I hope their dreams aren't crushed.
If they are, it's, you know, part of life.
Listen, it's another lesson. It's another lesson in life. And in fact, I want to even unpack a little bit more, because the thing that I like to be clear about is that there isn't like reverse oppression.
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about like what you said, like it's making the assumption that the only people that care about love and like gooey, sappy feelings are women,
mm-hmm.
something.
Right. And I'm not saying that I was sexist to him. What I meant is that I am perpetuating the idea that only women care about love, which is inaccurate.
And thank you for that. Because I know what you mean.
Yeah.
But not everybody like constantly has to do these. Well, it's mental gymnastics. That's mm-hmm. what I feel like to me. Like I've gotten to how many years of going through this of it's definitely gaslighting when you have men telling you that you're being sexist when you are clearly just trying to either speak up for yourself, try to point out oppression. You know, like pointing out oppression does not make you the thing.
Exactly.
So that's one thing. But now I'm so excited to get into that thing right now. So this question came from Tiernan. What is the most sustainable form of self-care, community care for activists you can think of?
Well, if we're going with sustainability, I would suggest finding out what that means for you, because it doesn't mean the same thing for everybody. And so if I'm looking for what's sustainable for me, it might mean that it's, you know, trying to go through maybe like taking baths is a form of self-care. But really, I think what is most sustainable is just figuring out what it means to take care of yourself for you, whether that's reading a book, disconnecting from social media. There's all these different types of things. Figuring out what works for you. There's no easy answer, I guess.
Yeah, I think self-care is a very personal experience. And it really just depends on the person. Like if you're a social person, maybe self-care for you is going out to a party on a Friday or Saturday night with your friends. Maybe you're not so social. Maybe you just want to stay home and watch a movie. Maybe drink a bottle of wine. Maybe not. Just drink some juice. You know, for me personally, it's like I'll call my little sister and, you know, and we'll cuddle. I'll have her stay over at my house. That's like my form. Like when I know, like I really like, I just need a cuddle. Like I'll call my little sister, and she's 14. She's the sweetest. You know, I don't have to tell her everything I'm feeling and everything that I'm going through in life. I don't have to burden her with those things. But it's nice to know that she's there and that we have each other. And the same way I call her when I need somebody there for me. Just to have that comfort, she can do the same with me. And so like if she needs you know, a cuddle. Like, she can always call me and I'll come and I'll come to her. And that's my favorite form of self-care.
I think another thing too that I would add actually is that in addition to doing like specific activities, another form of self-care for me was when I was seeing a therapist a few years back, figuring out ways that I could internally take care of myself. So recognizing mm-hmm. when I was having anxiety and learning how to have the tools to be like, I'm having a lot of anxiety right now. Mm-hmm. And speaking kindly to myself is also a form of self-care that might not be something that other people notice, but you know that you can do for yourself. And being nice to yourself is like one of the most helpful things to making sure that you're peaceful or at peace with yourself and can be there for yourself and your community.
I'm glad that you said that, because I also feel like knowing yourself and knowing what are your triggers, what are the things that are changing your mood really dramatically, what are the things that you know that can change it for the better, that's something that you just kind of work out over time. But as you're still in the process, I'm still trying to get through this myself, is journaling more often, because I'm not knowing myself. I mean, everyone's sorry, I got my passion planner and I'm still trying to get I'm trying. That was a Pinoy who made that
I don't know about project. Passion planner, can you tell me?
Ooh, passion planner is
you tell oh.
So passion planner, I didn't know they were Pinoy, but that's
Filipino
good.
Americans.
I knew they were Asian American. They're from like California.
Mm-hmm.
It was this like Filipino American. I was following it from the startup. Like, I've been following Passion Planner since before they started selling it on Amazon and
so
everything.
So imagine that instead of just like the dates on things, like you're keeping track of like your goals in life
mm-hmm.
and every step of the progress that you're making towards something. Yeah. So I've read a lot about students benefiting a lot from it, like that you're setting these kind of like roadmap for the year. And it starts from like, what do you actually really want to do in life? Like, what is the thing that, just like set a timer, you know, this is what I want to accomplish, like in life, in your lifetime, in 5 years, I think.
Yeah, 5 years.
5 years, one year, three months.
3 months or 6 months, something like that.
Something like that, where at least it's like kind of broken down. And I've totally like not followed it in the way that it was put in there, because I have too many goals.
And it's just a guide, you know, and mostly like, yeah, for me, it's the same. Like, I don't use the passion planner the way it's like,
you're supposed to limit yourself to one,
but yeah,
so that it seems manageable. Like, I'm not going to try to do all of these things, but if you have different interests that are wildly different, mm-hmm. like it can be like that, you can set your habits for becoming healthier or doing whatever it is. But I think that the most helpful thing that in between each month is asking you, it's a check-in. Like, you're like, what, you know, if you can't just like blank journal, it just asks these questions like throughout of like, what made you, does it go like, what made you happy? Like,
yeah, I ask you, it asks you every week, like write a good, like something good. And it has inspirational quotes, and it has a space for like a mind dump, you know, like brain dump. You just doodle or write your notes. And then, is it every month? I thought every month had like
there's
a blank space
month.
Where you could just talk. And then six months starts asking
big.
You like a bunch of questions.
No, it's every month. And then 6 months, you reassess like, mm-hmm. oh, did I actually achieve my goals early? Did I want to change? I want to do something else. Mm-hmm. But it's just kind of giving you like a way of like, well, how am I going to get there? You know? And I think when it comes to self-care, I actually did this and it took me so long, but I was just kind of like laid up in the house, recuperating from something. So I just went, I'm finally going to do this. I never do the New Year's resolutions properly or at all, because I just feel bad about myself. So by like March, I'm like, this is what I'm doing until the next March. And then, yeah. And actually, you know what? I'm going to share one thing that I kind of had private kind of among some people is the community of care. So in here, it's like community care, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there was this amazing Adrienne Marie Brown had something on Bitch Media that was like, love is political resistance, back in like, I think it was published right before Valentine's Day. And it was so affecting for me to think about love as not a finite commodity, finite, oh, you're only supposed to get the most love from one person, that you can find your community for, like, nurture, create your community, and that's the community of love that's going to keep us going. And that whatever, you know, goes, I think definitely people of color are expecting bad things to happen. But I think if we still figure out how to be kind to each other too, and what do we need to be kind to each other, it starts with being honest, being vulnerable. That's how I see honest. Not just like, you're going to be mean right now and say something nasty. It's, I'm going to be really vulnerable and talk about how something you did hurt me, and how we're going to talk about this because I care, you know, to work it out. And in some ways, that's, to me, is my self-care for, like, getting through stuff, is like knowing these are the people I lean on. These are the people I don't lean on, but I don't, you know, think too, I don't spend too much energy just being like, wow, I hate you so much because I can't lean on you. It's sort of, no, I'm just, this is my little pocket. This is my nest of people that we're all invested in each other's well-being and like our best selves. If somebody is not invested in my best self, then they're not in my nest.
Yeah, I agree. It's really important to remember that it's okay for us to be vulnerable. So it's always good to have people that you can be vulnerable with.
So the funny thing is, I'm going to break for music, but we're talking about really like good, intense stuff. And this very short 1 minute excerpt from Anna Vo is going to get your energy back up. So get prepared for that. That is from the new album, Rangana. I'm saying it wrong. I'm sorry, Anna. Hold on. It is the new album, You Take Nothing, is the track. Everything that goes with that. You were just listening to Anna Vo, You Take Nothing, and I'm going to correct myself earlier. It was from the new album, Ragana. Everything, we'll talk about all the links where you can find everyone's work at the end of the show, or online. And for the first, okay, so we'll come back to our question. So our question from Anita, just so you know, y'all, like, I made up names, okay? So Anita, air quotes, "A couple of weeks ago, my parents' cis white dude friends came over to our place to hang out. They got onto the subject of West Side Story and started to talk about the Puerto Rican diaspora in the film, which then devolved into one person making fun of Puerto Ricans in an absurdist objectification way. It was very unsettling to me. This person spoke flippantly without connecting that they were talking to a person of color." So that's Anita. "I wanted to call them out, but didn't because I was not sure how I could explain how this was a form of racism. How do you deal with casual racism like this?" And I'm going to add, in Portland, especially.
Okay, so this is Pucci. I'm the resident Puerto Rican here at KBOO. First of all, we're not even going to get into the topic of West Side Story. I actually really love that movie. It's one of my my favorite musicals. It's extremely problematic, but I love it.
But Emily,
I haven't seen it. But that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, they browned up a couple of the actors. Most of the actors that played the Puerto Ricans were either Greek or Italian. They weren't actually Puerto Rican. The only Puerto Rican was Rita Moreno.
Bernardo, I know.
Yeah.
Was not,
and she's great, but Rita Moreno is also very light-skinned, mm-hmm. and she talks about how there's an interview where she talks about how she got really mad because they would darken her skin as well for the movie.
She also said that she doesn't have the same accent.
Yeah, she doesn't too. She doesn't sound the same. Okay, this person is in Puerto Rican, right?
So this person is in Puerto Rican, but they're a person of color. But the thing that I noticed when I picked out from this is I feel like whether or not, how often, I mean, yeah, if somebody, you know, I will come for it when someone's saying something about Filipinos. But I feel like I also do the labor for interrupting any kind of racism, yeah. like for just other groups.
Well, yeah, because like if I hear someone talking about another group, that like they're not talking about Puerto Ricans per se, but that doesn't mean that they won't talk about Puerto Ricans as well.
That's and why.
Just like it's just wrong. Just if you don't know, especially if you don't know what you're talking about, then just don't talk about it.
So another thing is you just said they're probably talking about, you know, like people, mm-hmm. Like your turn is going to come around. Mm-hmm. What I think of this is they're also really comfortable, like these particular white people are comfortable saying this in front of, and just so you know that the gender, it's a woman of color, and they're really comfortable saying it, especially because, you know, like perceived, you know, conceptions. Like, it's just not, it just seems like they're supposed to get a pass because they're also friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I personally think, because she's asking how to deal with casual racism like this. So, I think if this friend was in your house, I think you have the power and the authority, because it's your house, it's your space. You can easily say that you don't want this person back in your space. It's your house and nobody can take that space from you. I think
Say that directly or through the partner? So do they tell their partner to tell their friend? Or,
well, if I mean, obviously she's referring to this person as her partner's friend, mm-hmm. so this, she might not have such a comfort level with this friend, so I would say maybe let the partner know, I don't want this person back in my house. Or if you're willing to have a conversation, maybe ask your partner to talk to the person, about what they did that was wrong, maybe help them see the light. And if your partner doesn't want to deal with that, then I think that's a little more, that's another subject that's a little more touchy, and a little more complicated. But I think you definitely have the authority to let at least your partner know that you don't feel comfortable with this person in your house. And they don't even have to know the reasons. You just tell them you don't feel comfortable with them in the house.
I think, too, the question also just touches on, like, how do we personally deal with encountering casual, quote-unquote, casual racism, mm-hmm. racism like this? And I've tried my best to always call them out in the moment if possible, personally. And calling out someone doesn't have to look like swearing at someone, yeah. or, you know, which if it does, that's fine, too. But for me, it's usually like, hey, do you know what you're saying is problematic? Like, that's usually how it starts, you know, and folks can get defensive. But I think that it is your responsibility if you see people calling, you know, making fun of other marginalized communities to stand up for them. And likewise, all the white people in the room should have said something too. So mm-hmm. I think that it's easy to kind of feel like that's your responsibility. And to a certain extent, it is if you are trying to make yourself heard in your own home. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I would question all the people in the room who didn't say anything either.
Yes.
That's right. And it probably starts off with having really good communication with their partner and just, you know, if this is what's happening, like, if you're going to be in an interracial relationship, with a white person in this day and age, but especially this town, I just feel like there's this like manifesto or this, there's like a list, like there needs to be like a pre-relationship agreement. Mm-hmm. Like, this is what you're going to do to, you know, stand for me. This is what I expect you to do. This is what I don't expect you to do. And let's negotiate. Let's talk this through. Like, I expect this to happen. And the person will just say, like, how am I going to know? Like, do you expect me to, like, read minds? It's like, no, then that means we should talk about it immediately. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm also trying to make connections back to the first question about self-care, because I also feel like there has to be a way to also, like, be kind to yourself. I think the other thing that can happen is feeling like your own identity is erased mm-hmm. when you're with white people, like majority white people. Mm-hmm. And if you're the only person of color in the room also, I'm making all the faces, just so you know. just like, also, then I get tired. Like, I get tired saying something every time. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I just want to just be like, I'm gonna make a fan that just says, not today. Or problematic, like a red flag. Like, boop, red mm-hmm. flag. Mm-hmm. And having that up, I think that's just the thing. It's like just also knowing that it's not your fault that you let it happen too. Right. That's really yeah. important.
Well, sometimes you're in situations where, like, what if you're at work, you know, and somebody's oh, yeah. saying something and you can't afford to say something about it because it might put your job in jeopardy.
And it's important to take care of yourself first wherever you're at. Pretty much.
Yeah.
What were you...
I was just gonna, I don't remember, I forgot, sorry.
I just wish I knew what they were saying about Puerto Rican.
Oh my gosh. You know what? We're gonna ask after this. So the next break we're gonna have is with Rios de la Luz, who came in to the studio. Rios has already been on our show also for Unchased Readers. And this, I actually really love this particular story that she read. So here is Rios de la Luz.
All righty. So I will be reading from my chapbook, Interstellar Bruja. And this is part of the story, Genetic Shadows of a Chola. It's the perspective of a young daughter and looking at photographs of her mom back in her Chola days. She thinks her mom looks beautiful and fierce in these photos. In her Chola days, Mama wore her bangs close to the sky. Her curls were voluminous and poofed over her shoulders. Her lips had a dark line around them, and her eyebrows looked furious and fierce. She looked like a Mexican Dolly Parton, except with plaid and some dickies. My favorite Chola photo of her was the one where she wore black and red plaid, standing proudly in front of a rose garden. I could smell the garden and the dirt as I looked into her eyes of that photo. On the back she wrote, dark eyes, lost soul, beautiful thorns. With the brown lines around my lips, I looked so much like her at that moment, I shouted brave things. Things like, soy genial, because those were the words I heard Mama shout at herself when she thought I wasn't listening. I got to know pieces of her through photographs while she worked and worked, then came home to sleep during the day. I found out about her past marriage. She was covered in white lace with her arms wrapped around a man I never knew. Her smile was so bright and overwhelming. Looking at it felt holy. It was the only thing I could focus on in the photo. She loved taking pictures of birds, birds in cages, birds the color of sweet mangoes and bitter limes, birds forming geometry in the sky. Someone took a photo of Mama in front of El Castillo in Chichen Itza. On the back she wrote, lineage, sacrifice, and listening to the echoes of my ancestors. The date was 1987. In photos where her white hair started sprouting, Mama never smiled. In their gray-haired days, my abuela and my bisabuela didn't smile in photos either. I followed their path. I had no white strands of hair on my head, but I felt a kinship to old souls. And you can read the rest from my chapbook, Interstellar Bruja. And by the way, that was a centered version of this story. Yes, you can read more.
What is Soy Genial?
Soy Genial is I am brilliant.
And I love that. Love it. Love it. Okay, thank you so much.
And so you were just listening to Rios de la Luz, and I'm Pamela Santos. How many times am I saying my name?
I'm Puchi de Jesus.
Bread and Roses. We are having just this like spotlight on people doing things. And because Emily Prado has this amazing Is Butter a Carb music and advice show, we are actually taking questions. And we are finally, I'm not saying this is the final question, but it might be since it's 6:50. We are finally getting to maybe a lighter kind of question that I've been wanting to get to. And this just shows me that we need to keep doing these question kind of Q&A advice shows coming up for Bread and Roses. Let us know if you like tonight's show by going on our Facebook page. It would be the website is kboo.fm/breadandroses. You find us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses, and Twitter is Bread Roses Radio. And this question, I'm just going to call this person not a millennial. So we're basically going to do like Urban Dictionary right now, and we're gonna define this right now.
Yes, okay? Please, because I don't know what any of this means.
What in the modern age is choosing season, and what is cuffing season? And there's a follow-up question after we answer that. So right now, because it's hot and sexy, it's choosing season is how I understand this. And mind you, I feel like I'm still on the cusp of being a millennial, so I call myself an XL-lennial.
What's something hot and sexy? The weather?
Because it's hot. Because the weather is hot.
Do you see what I'm wearing right now?
It is sad.
Do you see what I'm wearing right now? I think you've acclimated too much to the weather in Portland.
Oh, I have. I've been here for 8 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've only been here for two. So today, 70 degrees, I was still walking around with a hoodie.
I
like
soaking it up.
Layers. So I like jackets and everything.
I'm a millennial though, real quick. I don't know what cuffing season is. Can you break it down for me?
So it's the binary. So it's like if this is choosing season, as soon as it gets cold, it's cuffing season. I'm doing the dance in my seat. So cuffing season is when you pick one person or maybe two, I don't know, and you lock that down into a relationship so you can like... I hate using that Netflix and chill phrase, but you're just like getting warm indoors. Yes. It's cold. It's Portland, so it's like rainy. When does it start to rain? That probably is cuffing season.
Right.
But you don't have to. I mean, I personally do all of that without having to cuff myself to anybody. So you just have you just have a couple pieces on your phone.
And the choosing is because I feel like I also hear it from the other way. So as soon like you know that it's not cuffing season anymore when the clothes are becoming less, like whatever, people are going back to the gym, they're getting ready for it, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, oh, Valentine's Day is coming up, I actually think we're better as friends.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of those kinds of things where it just the phenomenon of the kinds of phrases that you hear at the different seasons too. Yeah. Like, and the funniest part about all of this is I was trying to have a way to bring some other word up, and I'm like, ugh, no, I don't want to do it. But let's just say,
who uses these phrases?
And see, this is the thing. Okay, you know, Pamela, what you're pointing it to me, and I'm like, you know, grandma millennial here. Like, well, I'm not,
I mean, I feel like I've heard them around before, but only in like
Tumblr.
Tumblr.
I like the new words.
Talking about Tinder, I think it's cool. I mean, I'm always keeping up with stuff. I'm also a millennial, but it's really hard. Everything moves so fast.
So you are against the, this is choosing season. So also people don't, when it's choosing season, people are not like locking that down. That's the other thing too. And I've heard that anywhere, like New York, it was just like, okay, well, it's summer in New York and you're definitely like, yeah, let's just see where this goes. That's another phrase.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, let's just see where it goes. See, if I'm putting this in the context of my life, my whole year is choosing season.
Nice.
At least that's where I am right now. And my life right now, this point in my life, I don't need to cuff anything yet.
I kind of like, I'm not going to be the complete sports head here because I promise you I'm not. I have my Mets team. I have like, I get, you know, excited about, I'm not ready there yet, okay? Because the Knicks has, they've trained me not to love the basketball team city that I'm in. So I'm not there yet, Blazers. I'm sorry. I'm getting there because like, I'm watching, you know, good players. It seems like choosing season is when you're, it's when the different teams are watching who they're going to keep on contract.
Nice.
Right? Going to keep on contract. Like, I think we're going to make this one a free agent. Like, yeah, yeah. You know, go and find your happiness.
Or you're going to like lowball someone. Like they're pretty good, but you're like, we'll have you stick around, but like, you're going to pay cut.
Yeah, right. And then you make your offers to your, you know, your Russell. Why am I spacing out right now? To your other, to your LeBrons or your like blah blah blah.
Carmelo Anthony's.
Listen, now we know that he really doesn't want any ring. So I think you're all right. Like if you're
Carmelo Anthony.
Oh, they're done.
Well, yeah.
I know. And Lala. But yeah, that's another dig at like, he can't get a championship ring. But anyway,
nice. They got a little.
Yeah. Yeah, I know he's part Puerto Rican too, right?
Yeah.
I knew.
His father used to be Yeah,
Black
his
Panther.
Father was a young lord.
Young lord, thank
in
you.
In New York. I have so much respect for that man. Mm-hmm.
And so this, amazingly, it just went by so quickly, right? Would you say? I would say.
Oh, yeah. Time flies.
Where can we find you anywhere, whether it's online or whatever, Emily?
You can find me online. You can find me in person, too, sometimes in Portland. I'll be at Solange tonight. I don't know
yes,
if anyone
too.
Else will be. But you can also find me on the internet. My website is Emily with two L's, Prado, spelled P-R-A-D as in David O. And Instagram, Emily, two L's, P. Twitter, Emily G. Prado. And anywhere, you know, just Google me. You'll find me very easily accessible in the interwebs.
Especially with a double L.
Yeah, yeah, it's unique.
And for Rios de la Luz, you can find the particular chapbook was Interstellar Bruja, bruja.bigcartel.com is the shop where you can buy it and any other writings. She has other writings coming up, especially a novella that we definitely talked about, but we didn't have time to air the interview today. Anna Vo is also from An Out Recordings, a POC queer and femme-centered record label. You can find the different albums on anout.bandcamp.com. The label started 10 years ago as a response to fascists and neo-Nazis creating and releasing music, mostly in neo-folk and black metal scenes. So now, especially, it's pretty important to also have representation in music. It's great. So today, one of the albums that we were talking about was the Ragana album. And also, Anna Vo also has a solo album, Continues to Fail, and about to also tour too in about 2 months or something.
And I also wanted to add, I sell zines on Etsy. You can find a bilingual zine called Con las dos manos, with both hands, and a anthology of women of color and punk rock. And that's etsy.com/shop/sludgejudy. So you can also just search Sludge Judy on Etsy.
And this we're going to go out on Burn and Roses. You can find us every week, 6 to 7 p.m. on KBOO, Portland 90.7 FM. The recent album from Anna Vo is a Vietnamese-ish song, and that is direct from Anna saying that, about family and their parents. It's called Lilith.
We sit in tension in our corners, in lieu of numbing chronology. Natural incline towards isolation, size, power, source, non-verbal expression. Is this the limit to our contact? When did we learn to grip each other apart with these silences? The weight is steady, steadily growing.
This is KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. We've got Hard Knock Radio coming right up for you.
And I tell you, it's too heavy to carry you both. I'm gonna need a little bit of help.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Spirit Trials, happening from Friday, April 21st to Sunday, April 30th at Disjecta, Portland. Spirit Trials is a live hip-hop soundtrack, a theatrical meditation on race, religion, and the criminal justice system. Created and performed by Delock Braithwaite, a Deaf Poetry Jam alum and National Poetry Slam winner. Again, that's Spirit Trials, happening from Friday, April 21st to Sunday, April 30th at Disjecta, 8371 North Interstate Avenue in Portland.